So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Good evening. This is Stacey Trisankos in again for Miss Timory, who is at home enjoying her bundle of baby girl. And she will be back with you next week, I believe. And so I know you'll all be very happy to see her back. So tonight we are talking about marriage like we always do on Thursday nights, but specifically I want to talk about Halsey. She's just such a beautiful singer, and she had this, I mean, this is truly trending. Like, I saw it on Twitter all week long that she posted that she is pregnant. And I want to talk a little more about that. And always we do this thing where we put on our Catholic glasses and look at the world through them. So I want to talk about, you know, what's going on there when this heart change happens with a woman, and all the things that start to, there's physiological evidence that your brain actually starts to change when you become pregnant and you start thinking about things in a more nurturing way. But I also want to talk about our spirit and our soul and how that changes. So we'll come back to that in just a minute. First, I want to remind you about something that Relevant Radio is doing. It's called Fast for Life, and that will be tomorrow. March 29th. Tomorrow, are you ready to fast for life? January. Thank you. I've had a really busy day. Is it 2020, 21? Is it like December 45th of 2020? Okay. So anyway, this is January. We're doing Fast for Life tomorrow. And what it is instead of being in D.C. all together where we can be together to stand up for life, there's a virtual online gathering for the March for Life. But Relevant Radio has this thing that you can join on their website called Fast for Life. And we're committing, asking you to commit to fasting tomorrow in prayer and unity for an end to legalized abortion in the United States. So click on that. Join us. There are already over 10,000, which was the goal, people who have signed up. And people are coming up with all kinds of creative ways to fast, whether it's from food or from an app or from media entertainment or whatever you can sacrifice for the day to... Also, since today is the feast day of St. Thomas Aquinas, January 28th, in his great advice from this greatest intellect, arguably the greatest intellect in the history of the Catholic Church, his great advice about fasting is that when you train your brain, you train your mind and your soul not to be consumed with the desires of the flesh, like donuts and chocolate and wine and things like that, that you free your mind up to contemplate higher things. And so that's the purpose tomorrow of fasting altogether. It's not just doing without. It's freeing our minds to climb and grant intellectual assent to higher things and to think about and pray to God for mercy and grace in our nation. So be sure you go and join that. And the second segment today, another one of the great directors from the St. Philip Institute, where I'm the executive director down here in Tyler, Texas, East Texas, with Bishop Joseph Strickland. Another director is joining us tonight. On Tuesday, Deanna Johnston, the director of Family Life, joined us, and we talked about being a working mom. Tonight, Dr. Luke Arredondo is going to join us and talk about the importance of faith formation in your marriage and in raising children, just at a very high level. We're trying to implement a consistent teaching structure throughout our diocese here. So he's got a lot of interesting, he thinks about this thing about how to form children and families in the faith a lot. So he's got a lot of interesting things to say. In the last segment, I want to talk about some research in China. If you've been listening to me, you've heard me say many times that I am still recovering from thinking of people as atoms and molecules because I am a chemist and I wasn't a Catholic until my mid-30s. And I understand this viewpoint. I understand how dangerous this viewpoint is. But researchers in Asia have decided through scientific studies that the key to solving their demographic woes, that being there aren't enough children, is to strategically encourage more marriage. Go figure. So we're going to talk about that, and Dr. Luke may be able to stay with us and share some of his insights on that, because he's also followed this issue. Some of us who've been watching that for many years saw this coming, but we're not talking about it just to be critical. We're talking about it to keep our heads about us in this day and age and figure out, pay attention, analyze what's going on so that we can live more intentional lives ourselves and be ready to talk to people about the importance of marriage and the importance of family and raising children if we are gifted them from God in our lives. And why that, you know, sometimes we just take those things for granted or we don't think about them very deeply. And it's always good to really dive into why. Like, don't ever stop being a two-year-old. Always ask why. So back to Halsey. This is the sweetest story. I don't know if you know who she is. If you go to Twitter, you will soon know who she is. But she's a young woman. She's 26. Like a lot of singers, she has Instagram and she produces songs. And I'm going to be honest, I don't, my kids listen to her, but I listen to her because I'm trying to stay in touch with my children. But was really sweet that she, it's another example like the China situation. She had this chord of truth struck in her heart over pregnancy. So the picture that she posted on Instagram is a picture of her pregnant. And you can see that her belly is swollen and she is now quite expecting. And she had said that she thought being pregnant and having a baby was a miracle. Like, don't we all kind of say that at times? But she had this heartbreak of miscarriage before. She had previously suffered a miscarriage. And she said, you know, that was the most inadequate I've ever felt. And I think that I was nodding my head. I've had 5 miscarriages, and a lot of women have, I think most women probably have experienced miscarriage, or if you're still trying to have babies into your 40s, you probably experience it. There's a good chance you'll experience it. And she said, it was the most inadequate I've ever felt. And here she says, here I am achieving this out of control life, meaning her huge success as an artist. And I can't do the one thing I'm biologically put on this earth to do. Then I have to go on stage and be the sex symbol of femininity and empowerment. And she said, it's demoralizing. And it touched her. You know, she loved that little human already. So now that she's pregnant again, she has posted a picture of herself with her belly and is celebrating it. And she said she's been really open about her struggles with reproductive health. She thought about freezing her eggs. Don't do that. But, you know, it's understandable why people would want to. She's had endometriosis. And she didn't think that having a family was something she was going to be able to do. And it is important to her, she said. It's very important. So she wrote back in the time when she had this miscarriage. If you've never listened to her before, you've got to listen to this one song. We have it queued up for you to hear. And just, she wrote this after her miscarriage. I want you to listen to it.
Wooden floor, Some little feet, a flower bud in concrete. Feeling so incomplete. Wonder will we ever meet? And would you know it right away? How hard I try to see your face. A little screen, a photograph, mine to take. I sit and I stare at your clothes in the drawer. I cry and my knuckles get sore. 'Cause I still believe it won't be like before. Now somehow I just want you more.
And she just wants you more. I know. I think we're all crying now. That if you've suffered a miscarriage, I really, really recommend that you go and listen to this song. And you know what? Say a prayer for her, because these little babies, both of them, have deeply touched her, because she gets it. You know, we all get it. We get it. And that is what the truth does to you. That's why I say so many times, if you're talking to someone who's not religious, just because that person doesn't realize he or she is made in the image and likeness of God with the intellectuals, the spiritual powers of intellect and free will, made to know and be known, to love and be known, to love and be loved, to belong in a family. Just because a person doesn't know all of that from Catholic teaching doesn't make it any less true about who that person is. We all have those deep longings to love and be loved, and to know and be known. And she's very excited. So keep her in your prayers. She says, oddly, in this feminist age, she says, "Now I have a choice." See, she's calling this a choice. I've never had a choice before. This is what she wants. She's choosing family, loving this baby, being a mother. And I think that's beautiful. It's also got me thinking about something that Dr. Carrie Gress wrote in her book, The Anti-Mary Exposed. And I have to thank Karen, the producer, for finding this today. It's something I've said before, but not as beautifully as Dr. Gress put it. Talking about conception, but she talking about the difference between spiritual conception and physical conception. And Dr. Carrie says in her book, The Anti-Mary Exposed, says a woman goes to prayer, and during that time of silence and being present to the Lord, like we're going to do when we're fasting tomorrow for life, a tiny idea is planted in her heart. It is so small and seems so insignificant that she may even dismiss it. She tells no one about it, and yet whatever it is, this idea delights her, sets her heart on fire, draws her deeper into prayer. Eventually, that little idea grows as the woman nurtures it year after year. Eventually, it takes on a life of its own, one that she helps to guide and bring to maturity. As time passes, the woman realizes that this tiny idea has grown into something independent of her. It has taken on its own life. It is bigger than she is and far surpasses anything she could have previously imagined. And Dr. Gress goes on to explain how we see this in so many lives of the female saints. And I think you probably, maybe you just never thought about it so beautifully before, but I think you probably have, you know that, not even, you know, woman or man, you know what it's like to conceive an idea in your mind, and you're like, and you go with it, and it grows, and before you know it, this idea has taken on a life of its own, and it's something creative that you have done, something that was your purpose to fulfill. And you look back and you say, that was the Holy Spirit. That was the Holy Spirit working in my life. And I just cooperated. And wasn't that great? And Dr. Carrie goes on to say that this spiritual conception is very much like a woman's physical conception, the physical reality of childbearing. And it's why even women who aren't biological mothers are spiritual mothers. And I was, you know, I have this book called Particles of Faith. You knew I couldn't escape here without talking about chemistry. I have this book called Particles of Faith, but I made sort of the same connection at the end of my book when I was talking about conception. And I was saying, look, even if people don't understand it, meaning people who aren't trained in Catholic teaching, even if they don't understand what conception means, we Catholics need to keep proclaiming it. Life begins at conception, because conception is a beautiful word. Think about it. Maybe you see where I'm going with this. It's etymon, its origin from classical Latin, conceptio, means the action or fact of conceiving in the womb. But in post-classical Latin, it also meant literally to not just hold something in your hands, but to behold something in your heart and mind, to conceive of an idea. And so if you put those two meanings together, like the church teaches us, literally, to say life begins at conception is to say that life of a new little baby begins when we know it comes into being, and that is conception. And I remember this feeling too, like every time, even when I had miscarriages, thank God, seriously, thank God the church taught me to know the earliest moments I was pregnant by knowing my own biology so well. Even when the babies were miscarried, I always was able to say to my husband, there's a new Trisankos in the world, because those babies are still in the world. And so, you know, I always kind of go back to that. I just wish I could sit Halsey down and get her a cup of coffee. Maybe not coffee, because that might not be good for the baby. But maybe a glass of water, and just have a talk with her and tell her these things, because something tells me she, like so many other women, I'm just using her as an example because I think women feel this all the time, she's thirsting for truth. And we got it. We got it here as Catholics, in spades, in abundance. So we're getting ready to go to the break, getting ready to talk to Dr. Luke. I just want to give you a little bit of an introduction before we leave out on this segment and get you ready, get you thirsting to talk to Dr. Luke. He's like Deanna, who has four kids. Dr. Luke he and his wife have five children, four girls and a boy. And he also knows what it's like to struggle the family life, because just like Deanna, his children are up here quite a bit as well. We love to see them up here, and they're darling kids. They're just the perfect combination of him and his wife. And he's going to talk to us a little more about the importance of forming these little ones, not just forming them in the faith, but forming them how to live their faith. So come back after the break, and we will talk about forming the family.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
This is Stacy Trisankos, Trending with Trisankos, briefly today as the guest host for Timory, who's still out on maternity leave. We have a guest in the second segment. His name is Dr. Luke Arredondo. I love saying your last name. He's the Director of Faith Formation here at the St. Philip Institute, where I work for Bishop Joseph Strickland. Luke, he's been here a little over a year. He received his bachelor's degree in philosophy at St. Joseph Seminary College in St. Benedict, Louisiana, and his master's degree is in theology at Notre Dame Seminary, but he received his PhD in religion, ethics, and philosophy, and I thought this was so impressive, from a secular university, from Florida State University, just recently. So he went and wrote about Catholic stuff at a state university successfully. And now he is working at the St. Philip Institute as the director of faith formation. I was so delighted when we met him, and it was one of those little ideas the Holy Spirit put in your mind, and it grew into something of its own, because I just knew from the first time I talked to him that he was the right man for this job. He has experience as a religion teacher. He's worked in parishes before, director of religious education at Divine Mercy in Kenner, Louisiana. And he's been an assistant youth minister at St. Joan of Arc in Laplace, Louisiana. He's a writer, too. I knew Luke from years ago when I helped Tito Edwards of Big Pulpit and National Catholic Register start two new websites, Catholic Stand and Ignitum Today. How that name came about is a whole other story. But we started Catholic Stand and the young adult site. Luke was a young adult then. And he was one of the writers. And I was very impressed with him even back then, because he was one of these writers who was very humble and submits himself to the editing process and is interested in doing what the audience needs. He thinks about you, the reader, and tailors what he does and puts his heart into his work. Luke, welcome to the show.
Wow. Thank you so much for that great introduction, Stacey. I don't think you know this, but did you know I wrote a paper about Fulton Sheen during my program at FSU?
Well, since you mentioned Fulton Sheen like 40 million times a day, I sort of had an idea that you might. He has a book. He's a co-author of Oh My Jesus, The Meaning of the Fatima Prayer as well. And someday we're going to get him to write a book about Fulton Sheen.
That's on my list. It's on my list of books I need to write.
Yeah, you're getting a long list of books you need to write. Luke, tell us more about, you know, just at a very high level, because I know you think about this, you're way down that road, but come back here where all the rest of us are, and tell us about faith formation in the family and why this matters so much.
Sure. Well, one of the things that for us at the Institute has been a real big idea, especially since COVID, is this notion of the domestic church. That the family is supposed to be in some sort of way, in a major way, right, where the faith grows, or where we can begin that maturation process, where we can form fundamental ideas like mercy, patience, virtues, really. The way that we try and think about things here, and what I think makes the St. Philip Institute really neat, is that I get to collaborate with Deanna, who's the family life director, all the time, and talk about ways in which general faith formation ideas, like having a class for second graders, how can that involve parents, or how can the parents be part of the process as we're thinking about how to do this really well. And when she's preparing couples for marriage, or when she's doing marriage enrichment, we want to think about what are the things that they need to be aware of about, you know, how the family grows and where children come in. And so to me, it's a really holistic thing that mm-hmm. if you have children, you need to involve their parents. And if you have, if you're working with married couples, you need to start talking about children. That you can't get that conversation to really work if you're not thinking about the whole picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're, you know, I've told Luke a lot about chemistry too, because I think it fits in here. You have to be a systematic thinker. You have to think about the details while simultaneously keeping the bigger picture in mind. Is that's what you do when you're putting atoms together, but you're thinking about what you're trying to make. And Deanna and Luke do this beautifully. It's a very integrated approach to forming the family, and it matters. You've got a family, Luke. Tell us, I just like to hear about people's families. Tell us about your little kids, because you bring them up here. They're so cute.
Yeah. Well, the oldest one isn't real little anymore, but I have 5 children. I have a 9-year-old daughter, Faustina. I have an 8-year-old daughter, Kiara. Let's see if I can get this right. A 6-year-old daughter, Therese. A 2-year-old daughter, Carol. And a 6-month-old boy, surprise, named Fulton. and they're really neat. One of the things that we're now seeing, I mean, I know we still have some little kids, but we're kind of, you know, we're into family life. We have a 9-year-old. She'll be 10 here in a couple of months. Is we can recognize that we've already passed some phases and some stages of the parenting experience. And it's so bizarre to imagine that, you know, so we can look back at memories from 4 years ago and think, gosh, they were little. And now they're, you know, not so little anymore. I'll tell you a funny story. I had a deanery meeting yesterday. We went to Mass at the cathedral here in Tyler, and we don't go there every week. We go to Holy Family. The priest said, as we prepare to celebrate these sacred mysteries, let us confess our sins. And my 6-year-old Therese said, they have the sacred mysteries here too. Like, she was really surprised. I thought, wow, maybe I'm not doing the best job. But yeah, Therese, they got the sacred mysteries everywhere. That's kind of the thing about being Catholic. So, you know, our life is full of interesting little stories like that. Carol just sometimes will sing the Gloria. Or Tom Tomb, she'll ask me to sing Regina Chaley, just like, you know, when she's running around the house and like having fun. So we have our nice little piety moments like that. And then we also have our real experience of being parents whose kids are fighting and all that.
Yes. It's interesting. I'm always, I'm always telling Luke that we're a little, he gets to look at what it's going to be like a few years down the road, because we also have 4 daughters and a son. I have 2 older children, but then we have 4 teenage daughters now and a 10-year-old son. So you've got that to look forward to. Those teenage
Yes.
years are coming with these kids. One more thing I wanted to squeeze in here, because I think it's been such a great success in our diocese, and it's a really simple idea for forming the family that sort of, it took us by surprise with COVID-19, but it's worked out really well. We call it simply, not Fulton Sheen, but we call it Faith Formation Online, just FFO, Faith Formation Online. We started it back last fall because of COVID-19. A lot of parishes were not able to gather the kids for faith formation. And one of our
That's
overall
right.
goals at the Institute is to reach into people's home and help form the family, not just bring the kids and dump them off at the church, but to reach in. So, Luke, tell us more about this program and how it's going.
Yeah, this has been one of the biggest surprises of the year for me. Of course, it's not the biggest surprise because there was a global pandemic that actually allowed this to happen. But right underneath that is the success of our Faith Formation Online program. So what we did was we started with a very simple idea. Let's have classes every week on Zoom for grades 1 through 12. We have an RCIA program also. And let's just see what happens. If we tell people we're going to offer this for free in the diocese, what are we going to get? And about a week before we were supposed to launch, we already had 300 people signed up, 300 families signed up. And I thought, wow, what a smashing success this already is. It has continued to grow steadily throughout the entire year. We are now over 900 families that we are serving in the diocese. And I don't know exactly how many are signing in every week, but it is a large percentage of those. And we've seen steady growth or maintaining the level of attendance in every one of our programs. None of them have really died off. What's really neat about it is hearing some of the feedback from families that they were not able to do faith formation under ordinary circumstances because of the complexities of family life and the busyness of their schedule and the reality that most parishes, even if they have a program, it's going to be one night a week, maybe 2 nights if it's a really big program and they really have a lot of volunteers. And sometimes that one night just doesn't work. So we heard from a mom who's got 2 daughters that she wanted to get in faith formation for the last 2 years and they couldn't do it. And because we're offering our program online, it's live and it's recorded. They've seen every class this year and they finally got things moving. And we've received a lot of feedback similar to that. That's just really blown us away. And I continue to marvel at what our teachers are able to do, how they're able to connect with the students, even through Zoom, to get them engaged and coming back week after week. It's really been a tremendous blessing just to witness it. I can't I can't thank Stacy enough for having the idea.
Yeah, well, I can't thank the Holy Spirit enough for having the idea, because this was, when COVID-19 hit, we said that we will innovate and come out better in a lot of ways because of this. And if you are listening and you're thinking, how can I do this at my parish? We would be happy to talk to you about it, about the logistics that we've worked out. It really wasn't hard. It went from conception to reality in about 2 weeks' time, and we've ironed out some of the details. And I had worked for Colby Academy in Napa, California as an online instructor, helping them build their science department. It's an online academy way before COVID hit. And so, thankfully, I already knew some of the bumps before we had to suffer through them. So if you're interested in this, you can go to the St. Philip Institute website. It's just stphilipinstitute.org, and look under Faith Formation Online. You'll see it under departments, or just search Faith Formation Online. We made the enrollment really simple, really free. And we asked for some help for paying for some stuff like Zoom accounts, but otherwise, this is the best use of distance learning. Okay, so I don't think kids need to sit in front of the computer all day for school because that's too much. But for faith formation, our kids do restored order, so they aren't even required to go to faith formation after, they get confirmed in third grade. But our junior high and our fifth grade and our high school classes are very busy. And what we have are kids sitting in their kitchens, and faith formation is happening while their parents are there in the background. I see parents in the classes that I teach. So, Luke, I'm sure you could talk. If people wanted to get in touch with you, how could they talk to you about how to do this in their own parish?
Well, you can reach out to me through the St. Philip Institute website. If you go to that, and if you search faith formation online, the St. Philip Institute's Faith Formation Online program is one of the top Google results now.
Yay.
So, which I'm pretty proud. I'm pretty excited about that. You can find our website. My email address is on there. It's larredondo@stphilipinstitute.org, but it is an obnoxious email to spell out on the radio. So I'll just say search for Faith Formation Online. You can find my email there, and be happy to share with you what we've learned, some of the things that could save you a little bit of time to do something like this. And it has worked really well precisely because we've got excellent people involved at every step of it, whether that's the catechists or the tech support. We're really working hard, and it's been working very well.
And you've done a great job of organizing it. So if Luke's name is too hard, you can always type my name, strasankos@stphilipinstitute.org. So that might be easier. But yeah, we would love to talk to you, because this is exactly what Bishop Strickland envisioned. And because we were, just as a leadership thing here, because we knew our mission, because we knew our vision, that we needed to implement a consistent teaching structure throughout the diocese, we were ready to go when COVID hit. We're like, hey, we could actually get this, we could make this happen right now. And it even, just one last thing, it even solved a big problem about the language barrier, because most of our diocese is Hispanic, but the kids speak English. And so the parents were hesitant, the Spanish-speaking parents were hesitant about teaching their kids the faith in English. But they wanted their kids to grow up learning English so they would be able to talk about their faith in their culture that's here in Texas. So what we have are the parents are there hearing the faith being taught in English, but they're there being a part of it with their kids. So it's just a matter of knowing what problem you're trying to solve and then going after it. And Luke, you've done a fantastic job of organizing. Luke's put in a lot of hours making sure the thing has life breathed into it. It takes a lot of work, but thank you very much. Well, we are coming up on another break, and we're going to head out, and then we'll come back. And Luke, if you can stay, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this situation in Asia about the family.
Absolutely.
Relevant Radio is supported by CatholicSingles.com and the Catholic Singles app. the Catholic dating community for single men and women to meet other single Catholics through interactive polls and personalized matches. CatholicSingles.com. Genuinely Catholic.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. This is Stacey Trisankos in for Timory, guest hosting while she is out with her little baby girl. And she will be back with you very soon. I know you've missed her, and I know she's missed you too. We are going to talk about, this is Marriage Thursday. We talk about marriage. A little bit of a turn on things. We've talked about conception and pregnancy and miscarriage and the beauty that strikes the truth that strikes a chord in our heart with babies and family. And we were talking about faith formation in the last segment. I want to turn now to a study, a scientific study. Researchers have decided, they have found that promoting marriage is the key to Asia's demographic woes. And what it means in a study when you find something, it means they've looked at the numbers. They have gathered data and analyzed the data and come up with a conclusion. And that conclusion is that they need to promote marriage if they want there to be more children. And the reason they want there to be more children is that there has been a decline in the number of births in Asia. And so the scientists said, as these were research scientists at the University of Cologne in Germany and University of Louvain in Belgium, and also a professor at the University of Hong Kong, did some recently reported in research that the most successful way to promote more births in Asia is to promote marriage. The fertility rate in 2020, the estimates continue to say that it's less than one child per woman in most of the higher income Asian societies. So less than one child per woman. Remember, the replacement rate is a little over two. So if you have man and woman and you're going to replace the population, you need more than two. So the two people need to make more than two more people if you want the population to be sustainable. So you need a replacement rate of 2.1. That's where that number comes from. But chronic low fertility has been concerning because it affects, so we're just talking what they've analyzed from their numbers and data. It affects the economy, the social welfare system, and the healthcare system. It also affects societal happiness. Yeah, they do quantify that. It affects societal happiness and a sense of purpose when people do not feel supported to have a stable family and bring up children. And this is another one of those things, you know, there's a lot of times when we read research and I think, well, duh. I mean, did you have to conduct these expensive studies just to figure this out? Probably not, but we're not in control of what scientists decide to study. We could have, a lot of times I'm like, man, the Catholic Church scooped you on that hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. We already knew that if you want to have a sustainable population, you need to have families. Christ said something about that, you know. But it's also good. I'm not disdaining the research. It's also good that they are seeing this in a quantifiable way, because the objective truth is objective, right? And they're seeing it in a quantifiable way. And I get a little concerned, though, because, like I often say, I know what it's like to look at the human person as atoms and molecules. And when you get too caught up in just the physicalness of it, the science of it, when you forget about that aspect of being human called the spirit and intellect and free will, and you're just treating people like they are objects, you also can come up with some bad conclusions. This is why we can't predict exactly what the stock market is going to do, and we're not going there, but we can't predict what the stock market is going to do because it's not atoms and molecules. It is the human person with creativity and a mind and free will, and you can't always exactly predict what people are going to do. So that is a concern I would add if they ask me about this, this study, that just because, you know, the bigger question is, why does promoting marriage promote a fertility rate that is sustainable? But nevertheless, they plan to implement some measures to remove the barrier to marriage and raise the marriage rate and therefore raise the total fertility rate. And they've decided, you know, supporting marriage in these tangible ways like time off and better daycare, and they have a list of things that they're going to do, that will make a difference. Dr. Luke, I know you think about these things very deeply. What's Sure. your take on this?
Well, I think it's another clear indication that sometimes a law can go away, but it doesn't change people's behavior, right? The one-child policy has been officially abolished, but it transformed the culture and the understanding and the expectations for so many people, not just the well-educated people who live in the cities, but even people who are living in rural China. You know, I mean, when that serious draconian kind of law was in place for so long, it changed the way people think about what a family is supposed to look like. And, you know, I was reading the New York Times you know, a couple of days ago. I think it was Ross Douthat's column. And he said, there was a quote from a woman said, when you've grown up as an only child and your husband is an only child and you don't know anybody who had more than one sibling, you feel like you're still a kid and you're a little selfish. And how can you have another one? How can you have a kid when you're still a kid? And I thought that was just a really salient point. It also reminds me of, I did one of my research papers when I was at Florida State. I was taking an Islamic family law class, and I did some research on the Islamic Republic of Iran. They changed their family policy back and forth over a 25-year period from, we need to have huge numbers of people, please encourage marriage, lower the age, make it easier, do all the things that China's trying to do now. And then, you know, they got a new leader who said, no, we need to look more like the U.S. Let's limit our numbers and have smaller families. And I read a research article from someone who did interviews with old people who were living in the regime of crunching down on the family size, right? So they had lots of children, and they were seeing their children grow up with smaller families. There's a line from this woman that I remember. She said, they used to tell us having three or four children was good, but now they say one or two is better. I don't know. I think it was better when our houses were filled with the sounds of children. And I thought that just really expresses very well how, you know, there's just some things that even if it sounds like a great idea to limit your numbers because you've got some goal that you want to reach, some of it can't be driven away. But the impact of that education sometimes can really take a long time to wear out. Yeah. It also makes me think of John Paul II in Familiaris Consortio. He talks about the roles of the family, and he has this image of the family of involving the elderly along with the young. And what we're looking at China is there's just going to be elderly and almost no young people. And you don't know how to be a young person properly if there aren't elderly people for you to serve. And if you're an elderly person, you can't impart your wisdom if there are no children around. So right. It's a sad situation.
Yeah, it is. And, it, you know, this is not anything new over in Asia. Sure. I've been hearing about this for decades, and it's still playing out. And this is one thing that people predicted would happen years ago, and here it is happening. Picking up on what you said, Luke, the article does mention that other studies have found that a societal shift to extended education for young people and an emphasis on having a career impacts fertility rates. As a young woman myself, I mean, I went through that. I thought the have-it-all woman needed to have the PhD, the career, and my children just needed to get shuffled around to daycare. As I was a girl growing up in the 80s and the 90s, I felt it even here in America that people are more celebrated in the workplace than in the home. And so it's kind of they're saying in this article that that is true in Asia. It's no wonder they focus on career over marriage and having children. They're leaving marriage and parenthood. They're leaving that, if they do it at all, till later in life, because they feel more fulfilled in a career. And, you know, we have to watch out for that here, too. We have to, you know, I've known Catholic families that when their daughters married young and started having babies, people sort of looked at them like they had two heads. They wanted to get married and have a family because those daughters were raised to value that. And kudos to the families that do that.
Yeah. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, the government at one point was initiating a heavy contraceptive plan to limit the family sizes. And one of the things that was interesting about it, that it was they found the most resistance wasn't based on like how religious were you or how or where you lived. You know, people that lived in the city sometimes were highly resistant. It was, your education level. The more educated people were more willing to limit the family size in pursuit of these other goals. But people with lower education levels that didn't value their career as much thought, which is so backwards from how we normally think of it. They've got, less means to support children, but they value them properly. They don't look at them as like a dollar amount, but as a person to love. There's a lot to learn from that.
There's a lot to learn from it. I mean, Deanna and I were talking on Tuesday about the attitude around here in the St. Philip Institute with Bishop, because he says if it's not good for the family, it's not good for the Institute. And he encourages us all to put our families first. And I am right behind him on that because I lived the other side of it. And it matters a lot to me that we have that, it's a role model for any other workplace that we have this focus on the family and we look for creative ways. I mean, COVID-19 taught us that we can be creative, but if you're doing that as a way of life, it's even better. Find creative solutions to value the family and the work. So something to think about. This gives us pause to look at what we're doing. And I know you think about raising your daughters. I think a lot about raising my daughters. I personally don't overstress college, but I do encourage them to go to college. Obviously, I want them to have options and choices, but
sure.
And helping them, I'm also kind of careful because of my own experiences not to overemphasize the significance of career, but emphasize, like we do as Catholics, the significance of vocation.
Vocation, yeah.
Figuring out who God wants you to be.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Well, thank you, Luke, for joining us tonight. Appreciate it.
Very happy to do it.
Have the pleasure of getting to work with you daily and appreciate all that you do. Before we wrap up here, just want to get back real quick. Today is, of course, the feast day of St. Thomas Aquinas. And I won't mispronounce that like I got the month wrong at the beginning of the show. I tempted sometimes to say Aquinas because in Texas, that's how we would say it. When you're a Texan learning Latin, you're not always sure what to do with the vowels. But St. Thomas Aquinas, this is his feast day. And as we roll out of the show, and I remind you again about the Fast for Life tomorrow, to sign up at relevantradio.com or on the Relevant Radio app. Sign up, join the Fast for Life, fast in unity with the over 10,000 other people who have committed to doing this. By fasting, we mean limit yourself to one moderate meal for the day and use that time in that suffering to offer it up for an end to abortion in the United States, and also to contemplate higher things, to really take that time tomorrow to pray for an end to abortion and to think about, put all this together like we've done tonight with, what's going on with the music artists, what's going on in Asia, about the significance of the family and forming the family and the importance, like we saw with Halsey, of changing hearts first, hearts before laws. We've got to really change that. So I want to leave you with something from St. Thomas Aquinas before we go. I was talking on Tuesday about fasting and the three reasons for fasting to bridle the lusts of the flesh. I'm quoting him, bridle the lusts of the flesh, meaning you unchain your mind to thinking about food. And that is hard. I struggle with that too. It's like easy to think about the Cheetos in the pantry. But if you just tell yourself, I'm not going there today, that's what being human means. We have that power of intellect and will. We can contemplate higher things, but we fast to do that. We fast so that our mind may arise more freely to the contemplation of heavenly things. And the third thing St. Thomas says is that we do it to satisfy for sin. So really and truly offer it up and resolve to pray tomorrow. I'm going to tie something together. That Saint, what I was reading was in 2:2, 147 of the Summa, but even earlier in the Summa, the Treatise on the Virtues, where he's talking about justice. We pray as a matter of justice to God. We are trying, it says in question 83, if you can look it up on Aquinas.cc. We pray as a matter of justice because we are trying like everything to give back to God for our existence. So keep that in mind tomorrow when you're fasting. I'll be fasting with you, and thank you for Fasting for Life. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.